Hello and welcome to Dealcast from Merger Market, the podcast that gives you essential news, data and analysis from around the globe. I'm Juliana Needham. In this episode, we're looking at how companies are considering defensive M&A ahead of Donald Trump's second term in the White House. To find out, I'm joined by John West, who's the managing editor for Merger Market in the EMEA region, and by Luke Decline, head of analytics also for the EMEA region. Hi, John. Hi, Luke. Thanks for joining me.
Hello, Juliana.
Hi, Juliana.
So, tariffs were described as the most beautiful word in the dictionary by Donald Trump on the campaign trail. That protectionist agenda sounds like it might make cross-border M&A increasingly difficult, but it's not necessarily the case, is it? Because multinationals are looking to do defensive M&A to ensure they can keep trading in America. Can you tell me more?
Yeah, I mean, let's be very clear. Any economic textbook you look at will tell you that protectionism is net negative for global growth and as a result, corporate activity. So, you know, we start from that perspective. But I liken it a little bit to, if you dislocate your shoulder or you break your leg, it's not necessarily good for you, but the physicians or health insurers or the rest of it can charge a fee. So there are always winners and losers from any particular economic setup. Now, it has to be said that obviously throwing barriers between trading partners, creating friction, economically not great, but there are ways you can sidestep that. So, for example, if you put your capital to work purchasing a company in America that can serve as the final goods construction of the goods that you're selling, then you are in a position potentially to sidestep the tariffs. It has to be said, it makes a big difference how the tariffs are structured. If the tariffs are on final goods, then there's quite a bit of leeway to import parts from various parts of the world, put them together in the United States, and then you sidestep the tariff. But if the imports of parts are also subject to these tariffs, then that creates a bigger headache for people. But a lot depends on how these tariffs actually work through. Scott Bessent, who is Trump's pick for Treasury Secretary, has been fairly consistent through the summer and subsequently that Trump is likely to see his initial offer on tariffs as something of a bargaining chip, which could be used to get allies and less friendly countries to come to the negotiating table across a variety of different areas, geopolitically, in terms of military funding, particularly for NATO partners. So it depends how it shakes out. But ultimately, yes, we see a lot of defensive M&A on the horizon where companies are looking to make purchases in America in order to sidestep some of the tariffs and political blowback from the Trump agenda.
Thank you. And so it means that companies can use money that they have to buy assets or businesses overseas in order to maintain market access for their goods.
Yes, that's right. I mean, I spoke to David Hennig, who's director of the UK Trade Policy Project at the snappily named European Centre for International Political Economy. Whew, glad to get through that. But yeah, David was extremely helpful. And he was pointing out that actually, you know, even though tit-for-tat tariffs, I mean, there's a reason why this kind of approach is called beggar thy neighbour. It's not economically ideal, but what he was saying was that wealth capital is largely uncontrolled versus goods. So a lot of what Trump has talked about has been, you know, throwing tariffs on the imports of goods, but the control of capital seems to be less in the spotlight. So one can imagine that money can be transferred cross-border to make acquisitions in, say, America. So that, you know, if as I say, final goods are the issue, then a lot of those imports might not necessarily face tariffs. Then you put together the final goods within the United States. You've got lots of jobs there. You've hired lots of people, and you've got political cover, therefore, to sort of sidestep some of the administration's wrath.
And Luke, coming to you. So we've talked about getting market access by companies buying other companies in the US, but Donald Trump has said that he will block this big steel deal, Nippon Steel buying US Steel for $15 billion. Will that tactic or that approach actually work?
That remains to be seen. The President of the United States has the power to block foreign investment under a process called CFIUS, which is actually the committee that oversees it, but ultimately the power resides with the president. In his previous term, Trump was fairly aggressive, obviously against China, but also against investors from other non-US countries. And the question is now, how will he handle this and how will CFIUS operate under Trump? It could get even more aggressive, especially if we see it in the context of these tariffs and these kinds of comments about the US steel, Nippon Steel deal. So it could even be difficult for European companies to make an acquisition in the US in certain sectors.
In a recent episode, we spoke to Ling in China about the potential opportunities for Chinese-European M&A due to difficult relations anticipated between China and the US with Donald Trump being re-elected. What did your sources have to say about that?
What we heard is that it's a little bit mixed bag. There's kind of a conundrum for Europe because there's a massive need for investment. There has been this Draghi report that's all about competitiveness and restoring growth and getting better manufacturing jobs back in Europe instead of outsourcing it to other parts of the world. And for that, a lot of money is needed and that money might come from China. So in that sense, there could be appetite for Chinese inbound investments. And we have seen in the merger market data that China-Europe M&A has been up 48% this year compared to last year, even though it's lower than in previous years, especially 2016, 2017. And that brings me to the other point of the conundrum is that there is a kind of ever-growing opposition to Chinese investments from a national security perspective. So you have seen increasing FDI scrutiny, so screening of acquisitions in sensitive sectors such as semiconductors, robotics, defense, those kind of industries, and European governments blocking Chinese acquisitions. And at the same time, you have the foreign subsidies regulation, the FSR, that came into force about a year ago, a little bit more, and that is clearly meant towards non-European countries, but specifically China, to avoid government-subsidized entities distorting competition in the European internal market. So there's two sides of this spectrum. The question then is, what sectors can still be invested in by Chinese companies? And one of these might be the automotive sector, where we saw an uptick in Chinese acquisitions.
Yeah, and that was mentioned in your article. So where I live in Leamington Spa, right in the middle of England, is the home to Britain's automotive sector. There have obviously been some massive changes here with the electrification, the introduction of electric cars and how all the car manufacturers worldwide are changing, but also the huge influx here and elsewhere of the new Chinese electric vehicles, which are being sold much more cheaply. Can you talk through how the automotive sector is likely to be impacted by the Trump presidency, whether the structure is likely to change? You mentioned earlier, John, about whether people could get around some of those tariffs by assembling the final product in the US.
Yeah, I think for China, that's going to be particularly challenging with the US. I mean, Trump has quite an aggressive approach to so-called rules of origin, which kind of ties up all of the, you know, if something's made in the United States, but half of the parts have come from China, the rules of origin on that would point you towards China. So he's quite aggressive on that where China is concerned. And it has to be said that over the last 10 years, so this isn't just under Trump, but also, the end of the Obama administration, under Trump, and of course under Biden, there has been a relatively consistent, to be honest, approach to wanting to decouple the US economy from the Chinese economy. So it's difficult to imagine, especially given the rhetoric that Trump is coming into office with, that they will be able to do that from a US perspective. But yeah, I think The important thing to grasp here is that nobody is really dealing with China, and Luke alluded to this, and nobody's really dealing with China in good faith, right? Because everybody knows that they, at the same time, have areas where they're concerned about China, which are chiefly around dumping, so economic dumping of resources, but also national security. And so basically you end up in a situation where, for example, the EU already has very strong tariffs against Chinese cars, especially electric vehicles, which they introduced this year. And those are targeted at Chinese companies, and Chinese companies are going to try and get around that by bringing more of their investment and build power into Europe. But equally, we saw with Pirelli, for example, I mean, Pirelli was in a bit of a standoff with a Chinese shareholder because of their presence in the book. That was seen through a kind of foreign direct investment screening prism as a problem, and they've had to exit the investment. And you would think, well, what's so very concerning about the presence of a Chinese investor in tires? But everything these days is networked into the internet, and as a result, there's concerns about tracking. So ultimately, the regulatory authorities are very concerned about China, particularly when it comes to telecommunications. But you know, it's very difficult to divine a line through this, because ultimately, you know, they're not so worried about washing machines; they are worried about telecommunications tracking, and so on. But so the needle to thread for anyone who's wanting to allocate capital is to think: is the technology that I want to bring Chinese ownership into, if I'm going to bring Chinese capital to put it to work in Europe, how do I tell the story about this technology not having a nefarious possible use case? And so there's a lot of the analysis and advisory and consultancy work that's being done at the moment is trying to build those cases about how the particular industrial application of the Chinese capital that's being brought to bear in Europe, how that is, you know, that sidesteps national security concerns.
And Luke, bringing you back in here and also your thoughts, John, can you give me a steer on what your sources are saying about how people are actually going to go about this, how businesses and their lawyers are going to find a way to make this work? We've spoken about the automotive sector. What are people saying about other sectors, and how quickly do you think they're going to move? Are people starting to plan for this now, or are they going to wait until Trump starts his next term and starts making announcements?
I think that people are thinking about it already, but they will start, we'll wait to see what Trump will do when he comes into office on 20th January. It will probably take some time for this whole tariff scheme to crystallize out. It depends on to what extent the tariffs would be, as we already said earlier.
But I think it's important to stress, I mean, sorry, Luke, I think it's important to stress that the direction of travel, I mean, you know, it's certain that Trump will be more aggressive in this territory than Biden, but the direction of travel isn't wildly different, right? We're already in a kind of deglobalizing or reglobalizing polycrisis world where in order to defend industries and defend against perceived national security threats, this kind of foreign direct investment screening or foreign subsidies regulation is used as a kind of geopolitical tool and used more aggressively. So the direction of travel hasn't really changed. And given that the direction of travel hasn't really changed, I think what we're going to see is an acceleration of what there is. So we've seen, for example, more Chinese buys, as Luke mentioned, in Europe this year. I suspect that will tick up. Some deals will be possible, will be allowable, because of the story they managed to tell about the way that investment is going to be used, and some won't. But I think as well that, you know, from the US's point of view, to Luke's point, it does depend exactly where we land in terms of where these tariffs come in. Are they going to be 10% or 20% or 60%? You know, Trump in various different points has used different numbers, 60% for China, between 10 and 20% for everybody else, 25% for Canada and Mexico. So, you know, obviously it's an opening gambit, but the direction of travel is clear. And I would think that if you're a company that can put some jobs into a US state and maybe cozy up to a senator in that state. If you are a multinational concern where you're channeling a lot of your revenues through an Irish based company, you're probably going to be running the rule on how quickly and how seamlessly you would be able to move those operations or the key operations back into the United States. So I think a lot of readiness planning is going on, and the capital will follow when there's a degree of clarity.
Great. Luke and John, thank you very much. Good to talk to you. That was John West, Managing Editor for Merger Market in the EMEA region, and Luke Decline, Head of Analytics in EMEA also. Thanks for listening to this episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it on your podcast app and please give us a rating. If you want to know more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.